Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Hey, I'm KC.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
Guys, welcome to Daddy Dake here. I am KC.
And I'm Teej the Deed.
And we are running dad duty today. We've got a one-year-old and a, what, nine going on 39 over here hanging out with us today. And it's going to be a beautiful day. We're probably going to try to get outside and have some fun with the kiddos and just do some playing, right? But we do need to talk to y'all about a few things. First of all, shed season is coming up quick. There are big deer with antlers hitting the ground like across the U.S. right now. Our buddy Anthony actually found a giant set, which I don't know how much we're supposed to talk about that. So
I don't either, but
we might just say that and that be it. I would like to post that.
It was a deer he was hunting there in Illinois, I think, somewhere in that area. Maybe it wasn't Illinois.
Might have been Ohio, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was Ohio.
Okay, good.
No, actually, let me think about this. It was Alabama.
You get Iowa and Illinois mixed up every time.
That's right.
Yeah, that's it.
Did I say Alabama?
I don't know.
It's somewhere in that Midwest, which is where big deer grow. He found a pretty cool set, man. Maybe one day he'll let me share those on social media.
That'd be cool.
I'd like
to rattle with him.
He actually, I think, had an encounter with that deer.
After shed. Yeah. Nuts, right? It's crazy. Woo. So, we're going to get ahead of this thing this year, and we're going to talk about shed hunting with a guy who knows a little bit something about it. His name is Reese Johnson. If you are on Instagram, there's a good chance you follow Reese. He's got a lot of followers.
He does.
And he's just he's not really affiliated with brands or whatever. He just does his thing there in Tennessee, Kentucky area, and finds a lot of sheds and runs a lot of trail cameras. So he knows a lot about deer movement and really a lot about like timing of deer dropping sheds and where they're going to drop them and stuff, and he gets into some of the stuff. It's pretty good.
This episode's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So definitely get yourself some space for focus and listen and dig into this
podcast.
Unlike
what we're doing today.
Or any day, really. this coming week, as you're listening to this, we're within a week of doing some pig hunting, and we've been talking about this for a long time. We have opened up the pig hunting party to the public, and we have dozens and dozens of people coming. So we have already shut that down. So if you're missing out and you're just now hearing it or whatever, it's we apologize that you didn't get in on it, but you are not in on it.
Next year, guys.
Next year. So we're all going to do some hunting. We're going to hang out on Friday, do some raffle stuff. Got some really great prizes, and then we're going to hunt. That next day on the 13th, and it's going to be awesome. We're really excited about it. We should have some good room to spread out and everybody, you know, keep from shooting each other and have a good time. And
yeah, so hopefully find some piggies.
Find some pigs. That's, we went out, was it a week ago or so?
Mm-hmm.
And we struggled.
Yeah.
Of course, we didn't go to the we didn't want to go to the place that we're going for the pig hunt, uh-huh, because we didn't want to burn that out.
Uh-huh.
And then we didn't go to any other spots that we've ever hunted, just, you know, in case we needed some backup stuff.
Yeah, we know where there's some pigs.
Yeah. So.
And so we were like, well, and first day of that little jaunt, I carried a bow,
yeah,
which actually was probably the closest we came to killing a pig, except a shot over one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But
I killed one.
Oh, that's right.
He's all 12 pounds.
That's right, dude. I killed a swamp rabbit the next day, and they were probably
about the
equivalent.
Same size. Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. They might be brothers.
They could be.
If you were at
They're
a Disney
swamp
story,
for sure.
They would definitely be brothers.
We need to post that picture. But it's pretty good. So we kind of did a glorified trophy shot of that pig, and it was cool. But yeah. We're going to, on that Friday night, we're going to do a little bit of talking, a little bit of Q&A stuff. So if you're listening and you're going to be there at the event, submit some questions if you want to. That way we can get some of that stuff out ahead. And then, of course, we'll take some questions from the audience. Talk a lot about DIY hunting, a lot about adventure, a lot about, I mean, maybe even some cooking. You know, that's kind of one of the big things with pigs these days is people are like, man, how do you cook this thing? And it just so happens, our good friend Jesse Griffiths.
He has dedicated a book.
That's right. He has a new book coming out called The Hog Book.
Yeah.
And I believe we're going to get a signed copy, at least a copy.
Well, so I don't know if it's actually printed yet.
Yeah.
But we will have it sent to the winner.
We're giving
winner,
away a voucher.
Giving it away, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we'll have it sent to that person, and it'll be signed by Jesse Griffiths, who is one of the coolest people out there.
One of, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, straight up on my list.
Yeah.
And we're going to do that Q&A stuff, and we'll probably talk quite a bit about our style of hunting, which involves a lot of mapping.
Mm-hmm.
And take some questions about, you know, finding hunting places.
Not napping,
stuff.
Though.
Not napping. Wait, I wish.
Some people find that out when they hang out with us. It's not, there's not a whole lot of napping.
Not
that goes
napping,
on.
Yeah. And when there does, you miss things.
That's right.
But anyways, speaking of that, if you want to submit some stuff for the Map Scout Challenge that we did last year, we're going to do it again this year. Maybe a little bit different format. You know, we're trying to perfect this thing and make it as cool as possible. But we are doing the Map Scout Challenge again this year. We're going to head out to a couple different states across the U.S. We're going to do some stuff here in Texas and really try to improve even on what we did last year about helping you find whitetailed deer in the off season by looking at your maps and then turning that into deer getting shot in the fall, which you did, we did. Quite a bit this year.
We did, man. It was, you know, it really did. And like even, you know, there were some instances where we had some encounters that didn't come, we didn't come out with a dead deer that was, you know, it was based off of the opportunities we had last summer to go figure out deer, you know, like it's just the experience, man, that we got with the Map Scout Challenge was awesome last year and it was a big help for us this year. And so I would say that if you're talking about, you know, we're talking about off-season scouting in this episode. You know, we talked about that it was sheds, but it's a lot of off-season stuff and how this translates into hunting. And so if you're interested in killing deer next year, then you need to listen to this podcast and you need to try to translate all of this off-season information into dead deer next year. So with that, let's get Reese Johnson on the phone.
Perfect.
All right, so now on the phone we got Reese Johnson. He is a shed hunting expert, in my eyes at least, which I don't know what that takes to qualify. So, but I think you're awesome, man, so that's what matters. KC does too. Thanks for coming on the show, man. What's been going on?
Oh, well, I appreciate it, guys. You know, it's time to wrap everything up, and I'm waiting on those antlers to fall. It's deer season went out here on the 19th, which is later than a lot of areas, and so I've spent the last 2 weeks, 10 days, duck hunting a little bit, taking down blinds, starting to put the camo away, and it's been a sad couple weeks.
This is a deer hunting podcast, but here's the deal: I'm not even a waterfowler. And the other day you posted a picture on your story, and I said, oh, my goodness.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. There's people that don't know out there.
Well, I got an invite to a place. So we'd actually planned on deer hunting and whacking and stacking some does, you know, to fill the freezer. You know, naturally, we're going to wait till the last weekend. And we did shoot several. We got enough to feel comfortable. We ended up with 9 on the year, just does, which is what feeds my family, my mom and dad and my sister and brother-in-law. So that's what we had ended up putting away. We were going to take some friends to our farm and go shoot some more. Well, we got a call from a friend who's got a heck of a duck hunting farm, and he's like, hey, y'all want to go? Well, when he calls, you pretty much drop everything and you say yes. And so we went, and then on that second morning, we had five birds come in at right at hours, and we ended up knocking out all five. We was in the timber, and one of those was a mallard pintail hybrid drake.
Ugh, man.
And he was pretty. He's pretty, and the man that owned the farm who invited us, you know, he was kind of like, you know, we didn't really know who shot it, and that's okay. But he's like, I'm going to put this thing on the wall. And I said, and so I was like, you know, yeah, that's good, great, and the other. And then by the time the hunt was over, he's like, do you want to mount this thing? And I'm like, well, I'm going to if you're not. I'm not going to let you throw that thing in a ditch.
No.
And so that one is in my freezer right now.
That's so cool, man. So,
yeah, and it was in good shape too, huh?
Oh, it was pretty. It was pretty. So waiting to do something with that, which that'll go with. The only other duck mount I have is I've got two black duck mallard hybrids. Mm. So I'm not a duck hunter by trade, but I have been pretty lucky.
Yeah.
When I do get to go.
Yeah, it seems like it, man. That's pretty cool, man. I saw I had a guy send me a picture of a mallard wood duck cross this year.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, dude. Like
that's got to be the prettiest duck in existence.
Dude,
I've seen that.
It's got like a wood duck head, but it was all green, you know, like no stripes or nothing on. Oh man, it was that. I don't know. I think birds are about as cool as it comes, man. So I grew up duck hunting quite a bit here in East Texas, you know, which is not the greatest place in the world, but we're not far from Louisiana and Stuttgart and everywhere else that you can get into a lot of birds. So, you know, we naturally kind of think that stuff is pretty cool and did a bunch of it. But anyway, you mentioned that you're waiting on antlers to fall. You know, a good way I've heard to get into shape for the next season is to chase deer around till they fall off. Have you done any of that before?
Oh, just a little bit. You can, my wife likes shed season. You can guarantee, other than the fact I'm continuously gone, but you can guarantee I'm going to lose between 10 and 15 pounds in the months of March and February.
Yep.
It's almost guaranteed that with all the hiking. It's going to happen. So if you're looking for excuse to exercise, you know, it's like treasure hunting is what I tell folks.
Yeah.
There's something you get for just exercising. You don't just exercise for fun. I'm not trying to be the best at exercising, but I have a reward for it.
The problem is that there's like, you know, Culver's and Bojangles and all that on the way home from that, you know. So that's.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
True. So what got you into shed hunting, man?
Well, you know, I mean, we're diehard deer hunters, you know, just like everybody else, I think, is probably going to listen to this. And, you know, I grew up, you know, Dad, I vividly remember as a four-year-old, my dad tying me to his chest and climbing me up sticks to put me in a lock on. And put, I think he had like two or three safety harnesses on me, I swear. And that was on the coast of Georgia. We've lived all over. He manages a national wildlife refuge. So I've done some pretty cool conservation work between wood storks, alligators, migratory songbirds, sea turtles, you name it. We've done it.
That's cool.
Now we finally settled in Kentucky when I was in middle school, and we lived here for, it doesn't feel like it, but the last 15 years. And this is kind of like the gateway to the Midwest in my eyes, and you got a little bit of everything, and I'd be hard pressed to leave it.
Man, that's a cool thing, dude. Like a lot of guys that are as hardcore about deer hunting don't have quite as extensive of a background in the wildlife side of things, man. Is that is that something that you enjoyed, like as much as your dad enjoyed doing that kind of stuff?
Yes. And I mean, I've kind of got to see a lot of this stuff firsthand, you know, I mean, he went to Mississippi State, and did wildlife biology and has a master's from there at the deer lab, just like all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, I kind of had I've said this before, you know, walking encyclopedia around me my whole life for deer.
Yeah.
And so that's a tool that I've had that a lot of folks have not been able to utilize. And so taking that to my advantage, and I've always, you know, just had that same interest and same drive he's had. And, you know, the unfortunate part for the wildlife side of things and conservation side of things is you either work for a nonprofit or you work for the government.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, there's not a lot of money to be made there. And so I kind of got to witness that. And I wanted to be outside and kind of do those things. So I actually got a degree in ag business and then, you know, did some ag things right out of college and then ended up in real estate sales, and now I specialize in farmland, among other things, but and hunting property. So that's kind of my, that's my day to day, which gives me the flexibility to come and go and do what I want, which is the most important thing to me, and I think I love the most. So it all kind of ties hand in hand, my knowledge and everything I've learned from that. And then it comes full circle with, you know, deer has just been our thing since we moved here and experienced Kentucky. We're on the western end. And then, you know, just once we got out of Arkansas and got out of Georgia and came up here and settled in, it was just like, wow, there's some big deer here compared to what I was used to seeing on the coast.
Yeah, guarantee you. That's why we travel so much during the fall. It's kind of get out of East Texas a little bit so you can, you know, experience some different stuff, man. And when it comes to deer hunting, you know how it is being from Arkansas. There's not there's only certain parts in some of these states down here that have good bucks. And outside of that, you know, you got to work really hard to find something that people would call big across the nation. So, but, man, that's cool. What school did you go to?
So I bounced around a bunch. I played college baseball.
Okay.
And I played 2 years at a JUCO in Poplar Bluff. I played a semester at Henderson in Arkadelphia in Southwest Arkansas.
Yeah.
And then bounced up back and finished out right out of Columbia. Central Methodist, where I went up, and my roommate from JUCO, I ended up going up there with him, and that's where I finished out, met my wife. Which North Missouri is pretty cool too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of fun to be had up there as well.
For sure.
Until it comes from a blizzard on October 31st.
Yeah.
It's bad.
So my dad's dad was a twin, identical twin. And he and his twin brother, so my dad's uncle, both played at Henderson State.
Okay,
so they played football,
I got you.
Yeah, a while back. So they were
football trumps baseball for sure. But
that's kind of a nationwide deal. Well, maybe not. I don't know, but people pretty crazy about the NFL for sure.
Yeah,
and college football.
I knew that when I got done with all that, it was going to be hard to beat Kentucky. And, you know, I've been able to travel more than the average person growing up and seeing quite a bit of between. And even with baseball, you know, we traveled quite a bit. So between those things, I've seen a lot of the country that a lot of folks haven't seen. And I knew that, you know, it was going to be hard to beat this area.
Sure.
And so I was content to come back home and settle down. And I convinced my wife to come. She's from Springfield, Missouri, so I convinced her to come over here. And I think I've been out of school 5 years now, just about. And I've got two kids now, and here we are.
Where did you pick up your love for shed hunting? Like, when did that click?
Well, it's kind of funny. I still remember the very first one I ever found. You know, my dad would walk with me, and he would plant them, or he would find one, and then he'd throw it out and try to get me to find it, and I'd walk right past it. And I think a lot of people struggle with this. And it's one of those things that still to me in my head, I remember there's a time when it clicks. And when it clicks and you recognize what you're looking for and you find that first one, it only gets easier. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks will say something to me, or, you know, they've never found one, or they struggle to find some. And it's not easy, but I'm telling you know, once you find that first one and your eyes become accustomed to looking for that curve and that main beam, or those tines shining in the sun, you know, and knowing kind of where to look, you know, it becomes normal. And then, you know, I've always had a fascination with antlers. And so it's just a continuation of deer season and late season scouting, which I cannot stress, you know, the importance of that, which I think you guys know. I would take late season scouting over anything else.
Yeah.
Summer and just about almost into rut. I'd, you know, consider them just about equal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can learn a ton from that.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So with that, man, let's talk a little bit about, we'll kind of work in a chronological order here. We'll go talk about your 2020 season a little bit, and then we'll work into some shed stuff for this year. How about, but, tell us kind of how the season panned out for you and what you're looking forward to in the beginning.
So 2020 was a challenge. In 2018, I shot 3 bucks in 2 states, and I shot 2 bucks in 2019 in 2 states. So 5 bucks in 3 years between, you know, two of those were in the mid-60s. So, I mean, I had a really good run and had, you know, was on, had some momentum coming into 2020. And, you know, as I got to running cameras and looking and this, that, and another, I set my sights on a very particular deer. And I made up my mind early on. It was it was pretty much him or bust. There was one deer that distracted me, and I would kind of bounce back and forth, and I hunted him a little bit. I actually shot and missed that deer. Whether I straight up missed him, I did hit a limb on that shot, and whether that actually, you know, impacted the flight of the arrow, I don't know to what degree. But I did miss that deer, my number two. And I pretty much, and then he actually got killed the week after that happened. So that was kind of a heartbreak. But besides that, I pretty much devoted my entire season to one deer or bust. And I stuck to it until January 10th is when I gave up. So that left me 8 days, 9 days a season. And at that point, it was the first time all year that I hunted anywhere else and for anything else. I mean, I had six. I don't really know. I'd be almost embarrassed to say that I hunted probably 60 times for that deer, but I did. So it was tough. I had multiple encounters with him, just, you know, wind and other factors, and it just never happened for me. But so we'll see if he made it and how we'll go into next year. I don't know, but that was kind of my 2020. I did draw an Iowa tag, took 5 years, which made my 2020 even tougher. I went up there and passed on a 135, 140, 8 point the first morning I was there.
I remember watching that on Instagram, and I was like, oh, I hope. That was good,
you know,
for
me. looking back, you know, I could say it's easy for me to say I should have shot that deer, right? And I do believe that was the only mature deer I should have shot. I actually encountered in Iowa, but if I had shot that deer on opening morning in Iowa and pulled him out of there and been, you know, tickled, I'd have thought Iowa was the greatest place in the world. And in some ways it is, but, you know, I hunted 100% public in Iowa, and that was just something I wanted to do. And so I actually spent only 4 days there in November, 2 days in October, and then I went back for a week in January and late season hunted, in which I did actually shoot a deer on public in January. My first afternoon back, I didn't get a great look at him. He had five on one side. I don't think he was, you know, too awfully big. I trailed him for well over half a mile. I think I hit him low, honestly. And I thought, I mean, I got good penetration based off the arrow, I thought, but he went a half a mile. He seemed to be making it okay. And that was in the snow. So without the snow, I wasn't able to make it that far. But so, you know, I assume he's alive and all's well. Hopefully he is. But yeah, it was a tough year, you know, coming off of a couple good years. It was a tough year in 2020 between my Iowa and my Kentucky. You know, I let some deer walk in Kentucky the same way that, you know, a lot of people questioned, and even myself, you know, I look back like, man, I could have shot that deer, but I would have never been able to give full effort. And I would always went down wondering if I had shot this deer, what would I have seen? What could I have seen? And so, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can look at it. I still consider it a success. You know, there's nothing to hang on the wall. And in some ways I do wish I had quit a little earlier on my number one, maybe went and found something else. But, you know, it is what it is, and I'm going to go into it next year and keep at it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's success too, man. You had an awesome year just spending that much time in the woods. You know, Tyler and I talk about this all the time, but there's nothing that makes you a better hunter than hunting, you know, and like if you get out there.
I have no complaints.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm blessed to be able to do what I, you know, to spend that much time in the woods, which, I mean, there's nothing else I'd rather do.
Yeah.
You know, to spend that much time in the woods, I mean, I'm very fortunate to be able to have that opportunity.
Yeah. Did you talked about, you know, having a pretty good hit list, it seems like. At least that's what some people call it. I don't know. I don't usually get the opportunity to make too much of one of those. We did in Kansas a little bit this year, but did you do that any off of shed antlers from the 2020 spring?
Oh yeah. So the deer that I missed, I actually have his antler from last year, one side. And that's how I learned about the deer and went all in on him, you know, trying to learn him, and then picked up the other deer mid summer, and then targeted him as well. Of course, I had three or four, you know, there's a number of deer out there, and the one stood out enough that it was really my, you know, him or nothing. And I just made it that, and that was what was in my head for the most part. That number two was close enough that I spent some time on him, but, you know, for the most part, everything else just kind of fell by the wayside. And I was able to help a couple buddies shoot deer in Kentucky. you know, I ran cameras consistently across all sorts of both private and public land, and just kept tabs on everything I could, which, you know, I like trail cameras just as much as anything. And there's nothing like checking the camera.
And, it's pretty fun.
so that's a real bad habit as well. I just love being out there checking those cameras, you know, just all parts of it. It just fascinates me. Deer in general fascinate me. And so that's just, you know, while I love to do other things, I mean, if turkey season's in, I'm going to be turkey hunting. If the duck season's in and I'm out deer hunting, I might go duck. I mean, but that's the thing. Just deer have always been number one, and that's just what it'll be. So 2020 was tough on me. I learned a ton, of course. Definitely have a plan going into next year. And I drew Iowa last year, and then I did an Antelope, Nebraska trip. So I'm sitting here thinking for 2021, what will my plans be? And I've got a Kansas point, so I know I'm pulling that. And I'm not sure what my September hunt's going to be. I'm thinking Colorado mule deer, but yeah, we'll see.
There's no deer in Kansas, so don't worry about that. But guys, if you know anything about the element, we're big on our acronyms, right? And we have added an acronym to the group.
H-T-H.
Not the muscle improver. However, he's pretty muscular. Hunter the Hunter has been hunting all over the hunting world on our YouTube channel here lately. Yep. And he just had a new video drop where he saw 7 to 9 bucks.
Yeah.
I think there were so many he got confused on, like, which one was which.
He told me 9 afterwards. Yeah. That's why I put 9 in
there. I guarantee you that one that he zoomed in pretty good that walked, like, got past him, that's a big buck.
My goodness, dude. You talk about frame.
I know, man.
So, he's had some cool encounters this year. Unfortunately, we've only been able to put together a few videos from his season, but the dude's going to be very involved going forward. And you've heard him on the podcast recently, so all you podcast listeners out there know Hunter the Hunter. And you need to go check out his videos if you haven't lately. We are also going to release a video very soon where I shoot a public land Kansas deer. So,
Toe Daddy.
It's coming out. It's coming out. So go check out the YouTube stuff when you get done listening to this podcast.
We'll put a link in the description below. From where you took the shot at your number two, how close was that to the shed that you found?
Probably half a mile.
Mm-hmm.
How do you,
in all honesty,
how do you get to that point? Were you able to deduct from finding where you found the shed, the time of year that he would have been shedding, like, that he was going to end up there, or did it take a lot of, or some trail camera info to help you out?
It definitely took some trail camera info. I couldn't have done it without those. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. From where he summered to where he spent fall was about a mile, maybe a give or take.
Mm-hmm.
What was the reason? Do you have an idea?
Not really, because, you know, it took me a while to, when he left that summer range and went to that fall range, it took me a minute to get him back, figure out what he was doing. You know, that deer was new to me. This was the first year that I had hunted that deer, and so it was new to me to figure that out. And I could even say that my number one, you know, a mile is nothing. You know, those deer really, you know, bounce back and forth, and I mean, there are some others. You know, I've even got a couple of private land farms that are 3 miles apart, and I have the same deer on one, just one individual deer. I'm not going to say it happens a lot, but I did have one individual deer across the camera, and I swear, I studied those pictures. I was so hypocritical trying to think, there's no way that deer went that far. But I mean, it just has to be him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a deer that I don't get in the summertime, and then all of a sudden he shows up in November. And so I think that, you know, that's normal. You know, 1 to 3 miles is pretty normal. And I will say this, you know, I find a lot of sheds in areas that deer summer in. You know, there, some of those deer will, you know, they have fall range and winter range, or summer range and winter range, and I thoroughly believe in that for the most part. But a lot of those deer will go back to that summer range early. And they'll shed their antlers in their summer range rather than where they spent in November, because that's where they're going to go back and grow. And not all deer do that, but, and that's what deer are so cool to me, is the personality. They're all different, you know, whether some are timid or aggressive, and some of them travel, and some of them hold tight to an area. You know, that's just part of it. You know, they're all different.
Mm-hmm.
And learning those tendencies is awesome.
Do you think that they're going back to those summer ranges early because that's where that first springtime food is, you know, first green up stuff is, or is it more about being secluded?
I think, I mean, something to do with the green up, but I mean, food in summer, you know, those go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. They're growing those antlers. They're somewhere. They're not thinking about it. And so as soon as that testosterone drops, in my opinion, is when is one reason and when they take off mm-hmm. and they go back. And, for you know, it varies for some deer. You know, some of them might actually lose their antlers where they spend their November. And then some of them, you know, they may take off and go back to their winter range. And so, or anywhere in the middle. And that deer, for example, kind of lost his in the middle. So it's, you know, you could say either way.
Yeah. So when you're tracking a deer that you found sheds off of and you find a summer range and then all of a sudden he disappears about, I'm guessing maybe when he sheds velvet or something like that. When you go to find that fall range, what's the plan? You're webbing out cameras or whatever, or like, how are you thinking about this?
Yep. I'm webbing them out. And I actually had, you know, my number one, I spent all that time on this year. I was so skeptical. I was so worried he was going to take off and go that I scouted as far as I could, given the lines in all four directions, and tried to anticipate where he would go. I tried to pick the best habitat and pick and find any kind of sign or any kind of areas that I went ahead. And I just put cameras out already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just put as many as I could out to anticipate his next move. And, even with all that, I still lost a few weeks in there until I was able to learn what he was doing. I picked him back up, went back in, and got back on him in November. But it took me some time, mm-hmm. even with that anticipation. But, yeah, you can go ahead and figure that it's going to very rarely, you know, is he going to stay, you know, year-round right there in that little bubble.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to go.
So what did he move to? Did he move to thick cover, or did he get closer to does, or what was your hypothesis?
I think it was the cover.
Yeah.
And I lost it. It was thicker. It was gnarlier.
What time of year?
And it was away from people. Well, of the two deer I'm sitting here talking about, one of them moved fairly early, like, you know, right around the time they would come off. And then, matter of fact, I had some pictures of that deer mid-October, and even once on Halloween in his summer range. And I think that's that Halloween picture. Halloween was a good day this year, and it had a lot of daylight activity across the board. But I think he might have came back to his summer range looking for does kind of early, and then went back to fall or traveled back and forth. But I think what happened is he hung out later than the other one did, so there's some variation. And then the one deer of the two was very aggressive, made a bunch of rubs, and the other didn't have so much of a tendency. So that, like I said, I go back to that's why I love deer so much. They're all different.
Mm-hmm. Both fully mature deer?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And that's the thing. Well, I was just going to say there's no 100. That, and that's what people say. There's more than one way to skin this cat. And that's exactly what, you know, you'll hear lots of folks say. They're all different. Mm-hmm. And they all do different things. They have different tendencies. So there's nothing more important, in my opinion, than building that history and learning. There's no greater advantage than having history with a deer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sheds and pictures and encounters all play into that very much as you, you know, build on that. And so the deer that I shot in 2019, that was a 5-year-old deer, in my opinion. He was probably high 50s, low 60s, 10 point, a deer that just in the same way encompassed me like this deer did this year, or those mm-hmm. two or three or four did this year. And I spent all that time on him just the same. Well, that being said, as a 3-year-old, I had him on only two cameras, two plots. So it kind of, and then as a, and actually I didn't even notice him as a 3-year-old because he was so rare to our farm.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a 4-year-old, he showed up in the summertime, and I'm like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. what deer is this? Where did he come from? So I went back in my records and I found him.
So for this year coming up, what deer, like how many deer are you going back into your records and going, okay, I need to find this deer sheds, and then I need to get some trail cameras up for him. Like, how many you got?
I would target probably, I mean, realistically, you need to, I think if you go deeper than 3 to 4 deer, you're spreading yourself too thin.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, which, I mean, there's nothing better than targeting a specific deer and having that chess match with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was able to accomplish in 2019. That deer there, as a 5-year-old, was the biggest deer I had around. And as I had him at 3, 4, 5, I knew his tendencies. I knew where I could kill him. And my camera let me know that. Mm-hmm. And he was only using 2 plots. And when he started showing up mid-November, it was only this. It's kind of funny because it was in my head, it was such a low percentage chance of that farm. He was using just those 2 small areas at the very back of the farm. And it was such a low percent chance. I actually targeted a different deer, checked the camera the second week of November, mid gun season, and was like, oh my gosh, he's been here consistently 3 out of 6 or 7 days. And I've not been here. And I was kicking myself for not getting in there sooner. Well, I only hunted him twice in the second afternoon. I was able to, you know, see him chasing a doe, and I was able to, you know, shoot him right there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that deer right there, with 3 years of history, dreaming about that deer, thinking about that deer, there was, you know, that meant more to me and on that one deer than just shooting a random deer that might have been bigger. It's, mm-hmm. you know, there's something about shooting a deer that you have history with that just means more.
Mm-hmm.
How many sets of sheds do you have of that deer?
0.
Oh,
huh.
Well, that deer used such a small percentage of our farm. He was only he would just more or less come across and check those 2 food plots.
Mm-hmm.
Those that little, you know, 50 of a 300 to 400 acre farm we have there, he would only come across 50 acres of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would just live at the back, and so he was so hard to pattern and so hard to hunt that you couldn't pressure him too hard because you only had, you know, legitimately 1, maybe 2 stands to try to chase him out of.
Mm-hmm. So in the next, okay, going into 2021, do you feel like that right now is a pivotal time for you to start? Like, I guess when you start looking at your target bucks or your hit list or whatever for next year, like, do you feel like, man, like there's a big pressure on me to go find these sheds? I need to find these sheds because it's the first piece of the puzzle. Or does that matter for next year?
It, in my opinion, it really does. And I probably put more pressure on myself to try to find those than is necessary. But man, if you really can find those, that's such a big piece because you can prove, you know, that, you know, that deer was right there.
Mm-hmm.
Be it bed or food, which is most likely where you're going to find those antlers. That is most likely where they're going to be. And so you can really utilize that and plug that into your puzzle, and it will help you a lot. I really believe that.
So does that mean that your number one goal right now is to get out there and look for number one and number two's antlers, and that's what you're focusing on?
As soon as I feel comfortable they are on the ground,
mm-hmm.
yes. Okay. Yes.
That's kind of my next question.
That will be my number one and number, you know, those will be my top priorities. I will spend more time grid searching, going back and forth and putting in more miles in those areas than I will scouting random or new areas, for sure.
How detrimental is it if you go in there and you see number two run off with both sides still attached? You bump him.
Well, I'd be pretty torn, I'm not going to lie, if I did that. But I think it's a necessary risk. You know, there's people out there that say sanctuaries and this, that, and the other, and don't ever go in them and this, that. You know, I don't buy that.
Yeah.
They're accustomed. Doesn't really matter where you're at. There's some element of human pressure or just outside pressure in general.
Yeah. Coyote and jump them up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so there's so many outside factors that I think it's worth. And plus, I mean, you think about 10 years, 20 years from now, you still got those antlers and they're in your shop, they're in your barn, they're on your wall. I mean, it's worth the risk 100% to get your hands on those, you know, and plus they're just so cool to have. I mean, there's nothing, you know, even if you, it's just like the guy that, you know, we're seeing the giant deadhead in Ohio floating around. Now that guy couldn't hunt the farm, but he's got all those sets of sheds from that deer and he ended up with the deadhead, of course, but
yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, would you not go in there for that? Or, you know, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, how could you not? So what's it's worth it.
What's your date of, like, delineation? You know, at least where you're at. I know it's going to vary across the country, but, like, what day are you like, I'm going in there?
So it's going to vary, and it's hard, I know, because it changes. But the window to me is Valentine's Day through March 15th.
Mm-hmm.
I would say approximately Valentine's Day, 50% should be on the ground. By March 15th, you're looking at 75 to 80% on the ground.
Uh-huh.
And so this is the way I approach it. If I'm hunting pressured or ground, or maybe there's other people who have permission, or maybe it's public, whatever it is, I'm going to consistently hit the fields, the easy stuff, the obvious stuff early. Stuff that puts no pressure on the deer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm going to check those potentially over and over and over, especially if there's a deer I'm targeting or deer I'm worried about, or if there's another person who might find those incidentally or on purpose. I'll check those multiple times, you know, all the way from mid-January on into. And then there comes a certain point, and you kind of make that decision for yourself. If I'm the only one on the farm and I have the bedding, there's certain farms I won't even touch until mid-March, because I know I'm the only person that has permission.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll wait, and I'll go in there when they're all on the ground and hopefully have a heyday. And there's other farms that I share permission on or share rights to, and those farms I will incrementally stagger and hit, you know, food plots, and then, of course, maybe get in that bedding at certain times. Or if there's a certain deer that has my attention, I want to get in there, you know, maybe before the squirrels get them or before they get, you know, while it's fresh, or maybe I know where he's at. But that's kind of how I approach it.
Yeah. Let's, real quick before we go further, let's validate. How many sheds did you find last year?
So I picked up 108 last year before turkey season.
Mm. So that's an even number. Would they all match?
No, I wish. It would shock you how few sets that I find, in all honesty.
Oh, I know.
Of the 108, I counted back 16 amounted to sets, so 16 antlers, so 8 sets. And I have to think 5 were side by side. So mm-hmm. 3 I picked up, you know, one here, one there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's so when if you find a set side by side, you know, you just know the odds were on your side.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a very common.
I found a set side by side in Tyler's front yard last year. A good set too. What mm-hmm. was that? The spring of 2020, wasn't it?
No, it was in November.
That's right.
It was like end season. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was from the season before.
They were chewed a little bit.
Yeah, they chewed a little bit. But
they're good.
It was a fun find, because Tyler, literally 10 steps from his driveway, they've been there, you know, for 6 months or something, you know.
All the leaves fell off, and all of a sudden Casey pulls in my drive. He's like, I'm pretty sure there's a match set over there, by the way. It was good. But so you keep do you keep, like, a spreadsheet for all this shed stuff? Or, like, it seems like you're a pretty analytical guy. How do you keep up with all this? Is it all in the dome or what?
I'm not as analytical as you would think. My record keeping is my camera roll.
Okay.
When I go back, I take pictures of, you know, as they lay, as they say. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when I find them, I usually always do my best to snap a picture where it is before I pick it up. Or maybe after I pick it, sometimes I can't help myself.
Yep.
But, mm-hmm. you know, so, you know, last year, and I think I'll blame it on COVID, maybe not, but last year COVID started. I really didn't intend to pick up 100. My goal was 75. I picked up 108. You know, the year before was 75, or give or take. And then the year before that, it was somewhere between 50 and 60. And the year before that, it was somewhere between 50 and 60. So it's been growing, and it's just a passion that, you know, getting out there and doing it. You know, I picked up a bunch over the years. And so here's kind of another stat that people might be interested in. The way I've done this, I walk both public and private in multiple states. And on public, my ratio is 3 miles per antler. And on private, it's 2 miles per antler.
Mm, that's pretty good.
And that's just for me and my own record keeping in my own head. You know, I keep my records are my health app on my iPhone, so don't get too crazy with it. But I kind of look at that day per day. You know, I think the biggest day I had last year was 17 miles. but there's multiple days over 10 where I will really get after it when I'm finding, you know, finding those enough. So there's, you know, that's a little bit, which may or may not help folks, but, that's kind of what I'm seeing, what I'm finding. So, I mean, to pick up 108 sheds last year, I am guessing that I approximately walked 350 miles, give or take, between January 25th and March 25th, to green up essentially.
So I think, imagine with that increased productivity has come some expertise or some at least heavy experience that has led you to learn a few things about where to find these things. How are you spending your time more efficiently, or are you just cutting through the woods and trying to find it wherever?
So this is what I'll tell folks. If you're just getting started and you're looking and you're waiting till March, you know, and you're doing the whole shed rally or whatever you want to say, that's probably your best bet, and two, probably the easiest time to do it. And if you're just learning, getting into it, I would 100% recommend bean or wheat fields or just pastures with fescue in it. If you're looking for an easy way to kind of get started and run up on those antlers, which those are all food sources, of course. So, you know, you got to think this time of year, it's food to bed and bed to food, and that's it. There's no excess, no burning calories on anything else. They're concentrated. They're limited on the range right now. They're pretty much, you know, got one thing on their mind, and that's just survival until the green up occurs. And so if you can figure out what those two things are, you'll be way better off. You know, so I would recommend starting in those three things: wheat, bean, or just pasture ground, even front yards. You know, anything that's one time I picked up a set. There was this lot kind of out in the country where they had actually cleaned it up and they'd planted some fescue or some grass of some sort. Maybe it's Kentucky bluegrass. I don't remember. But they were planning to build a house the next summer. They cleaned up the lot. Well, I was driving down the road one day and I knew it when I drove. I saw it and I was like, hey, and it was a set. And I knew it and I turned around and got them. And, you know, that's just one of those things. They know where that, you know, any kind of new grass, any kind of bean field, any kind of, you know, those are some very obvious places for the beginner to look, to start out. That's pretty easy. And so I would say, I would hate to put a percentage on it, but I would say 25, maybe up to 40%, you know, and I think a lot of deer bucks, we're talking about bucks because they're losing their antlers, are going to drop those antlers in those food sources because, you know, they're grazing, they're bouncing their head back and forth, they're hitting them on things, you know, whatever. That's where they're actively moving around, and they're spending a fair amount of time, probably mostly at night, and that's where they're going to, you know, lose those. So that leaves the remaining, in my head, 60%, we'll say. So I would estimate the remaining 40, potentially up to 50%, are in beds. Some of the prettiest finds I'll ever, you know, and I've got some pictures I could show it, are on, you know, points or knobs where, you know, a deer is overlooking. You can tell a buck laid here for a reason. Maybe he had the wind over his back, maybe he didn't, but he was laying on a side of a hill or a knob overlooking a big bottom, you know, just, you know, and when you find that set, you know, or maybe you find an antler, you know, it's just, you should, you know, take the time to imagine why and think about it. Why was this deer here? He was here for a reason. He was bedded right here, obviously. You wouldn't believe I found several, you know, a bunch tucked up next to big dead trees or down logs, you know, is what I mean. But, you know, they're bedded up next to those for the sense of comfort. They've got their back protected and they're overlooking something usually. And so that's kind of one area you can look at. And For layman's terms, if you're looking at Onyx and you're following the topo map, that usually that average dark contour line, that kind of mid slope, is one of the best places to focus, because those deer, in my opinion, they will walk the bottom and they will walk the top. And usually in the bottoms, it's creeks or fields, or on top, it's the same. But those side slopes, if you will walk kind of midway up and down and look up and look down, you will generally find more antlers, in my opinion. You're going to miss some on top and you're going to miss some on the bottom, but they will bed on those mid slopes, I think, wherever you're at. And that's where they seem to spend the most time, both traveling and bedding. And so I would give it 40, 40, 40, and 20 just to be safe as far as food, bed, and travel. And so there's less sheds to be found on those travel corridors. I get a lot of times, you know, people say, oh, creek crossings or fence crossings where they have to jump. And yes, you will find some there occasionally. It happens. But the majority of them, in my opinion, are going to be in the beds. You will find some. You know, food would be next. And then, you know, transitions would be third.
Man.
Is there a correlation to where you find matched sets?
No, and I wish there was. I mean, there seems to be no data on that. And it doesn't really matter to me, you know, whether they're big deer or small deer.
Yeah.
The odds of finding a set seem to be slim regardless. And I feel comfortable saying that. I picked up enough antlers that, you know, you will find some side by side. And if you find one, you should definitely look around your surrounding that, all right, is there, you know, do I see an antler within the next 50 yards, any given direction? Odds are it's going to be no. But there's no rhyme or reason. I've picked them up as far as, you know, pushing a mile, you know, from one side to the other.
Yeah.
So there's really no rhyme or reason.
You run trail cameras a ton. We already know that. But I'm assuming you run them on into shed season. What's the longest you've seen a deer hang on to one after he dropped the other?
I've actually had deer carrying in April. Which will break your heart. I jumped a deer last year while shed hunting, had more than one in my hand and jumped him up, and he was at least a 50s caliber deer and had both sides. And it was like mid-March, and I'm sitting there thinking, you've got to be kidding me. And he was not nice enough to drop him as he ran.
When Eastman's, huh?
And so, you know, I mean, there's no winning. And that's the thing. You know, you're racing the green up. The green up is when it gets hard. Spring gets here. Target season gets here. You're thinking about other things naturally. And so when that occurs, you know, there's a window for sheds. And sometimes those deer are going to carry those antlers late. And that's just a risk you take and just part of it. You know, you're not going to win them all. You know, there's some you're going to find the following year because they carried them late, and it is what it is. But, you know, I've picked up some as early as Christmas Day. You know, I think that was the injured buck. But, you know, it does not hurt to get out there and learn.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You cannot underestimate the value, in my opinion, of, I mean, yes, you're shed hunting. You're hopefully getting something out of it. You're getting to take an antler home, maybe, if you're lucky enough. But as you're walking and as you're going, you know, you should be really looking for, you know, there's nothing, those trails and those scrapes are more defined, and those rubs even, they really stand out this time of year. And you should be, you know, I'm dropping waypoints everywhere I go, scrape here, rub here. And if a target buck or anything ever brings me back to that area for any given reason, or maybe I feel like today with this wind, I should go hunt this area because that's what I've been dealt. Well, guess what? I've got a scrape marked. Maybe I go sit over it, but I haven't been there in 3 months. But that's okay because I've been there once before, and maybe I don't remember it the most, but having that on X takes you in there, you get to that point, and you go set up right there, which I did multiple times this year, situationally thinking, well, you know, maybe this deer's over here. So if I go over here, this is what I want to do today. I'm going to hang and hunt, and I'm going to go. I know that this scrape was here, you know, in the wintertime. And my opinion is also, if you can find those scrapes now, which means they were worked after the leaves fell, and that being the case, they're more likely to be scrapes that get used more often than just an October scrape that was testosterone fueled and was created one time. And so if you can find them now, they usually mean more.
Yeah. So I struggle. Like, I focus on one thing pretty hard when I go outside. So if I'm shed hunting, I'm pretty focused on that, and it definitely hinders my ability to find and analyze signs sometimes. And Casey and I, a lot of times, we'll go out, like, we're like, hey, let's go pig hunting in the postseason, and we'll kind of scout, you know. And it ends up just being deer scouting, you know. We end up not even working into the wind anymore by the end of it and trying to kill pigs because we're just looking at scrapes and trails and everything else, you know. So, like, how – and you may be different than me. KC's pretty good at, like, I guess you could call it the multitask, where he pretty much sees everything at one time, you know, and so
which
I don't
has
know if
its
that's
own
you,
set of problems. Believe
yeah,
me.
it definitely can be like a squirrel situation, you know. But for you, how are you able to kind of focus on both aspects of that at the same time, or are you?
Well, luckily for us, we don't have many pigs, and so I'm not distracted there. I'm usually not carrying a weapon,
yeah.
so that does limit me there. But I mean, you know, you do have to have a conscious, you know, effort to like, okay, I'm looking, but also, I mean, yeah, you use like, is this trail more worn down than the one I was on one holler over or one ridge over, you know, or is this scrape, you know, how recently has it been worked and what's the sign look like, you know, when was this rub made? And you know, that's a lot of things. I feel like I'm getting, you know, if I get technical there with, you know, rubs, you know, you can really rubs are a whole nother subject, but you know, if you can find a cluster of them, you kind of got to, you know, cipher, you know, was there several here made him, but was it when he was shedding in October and, you know, testosterone fueled, or was this just a rub in passing because it's a standard, you know, saddle and trail coming up over this right here. So it's kind of hard in that sense, but I do my best in multitasking, and, you know, you do have to consciously think about it. You mean, you really do, you know, okay, I'm shedding. Yes, I'm looking for things, but if this is where my target deer is living and this is where I'm spending my time, I need to pay attention very closely because I may only come in here one or two or three times. And I may only have so many opportunities to come in here before the green up and before he starts coming back in here next fall. And I want to make the most of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what, You mentioned the breakdown of a 40-40-20 where there's 40% or so that are in fields from feeding at night. There's 40% in the beds where they spend a lot of time during the day. And then there's a 20 in the travel areas. And so technically probably about 60% of that is in the timber in most areas of the country. Now,
that's right.
That could make,
if not more. Yeah,
sure. So that can make it pretty difficult, you know, find sheds when you got just dead timber and dead leaves and trees and everything else, you know. And like you said in the beginning, I'm sure there's definitely probably the biggest aspect of helping yourself is to find a lot of sheds and therefore, you know how to look for that main beam or those tines, like you said. But are there any other just kind of little pro tips or, you know, thoughts about how to really search for sheds, you know, and like, do you, you know, I've heard people that turn around every, you know, 10 yards or whatever and take a look back. Is that something you do, or are you just always, you know, driving forward, and how do you figure out how to search through all the stuff and pick out the sheds?
So I'm usually on the go. Very rarely will I stop and really look around, even though I will say there have been times I have stopped to, you know, take a leak or do something, look around, like, oh, well, I would not have seen that otherwise. So, I mean, there are times when that can come into play. That's not really my style. And I guarantee, you know, there's no telling how many I've walked past over the years doing that way. But I like to cover a lot of ground. I like to see a lot of country. I want to see as much sign as possible and make the, you know, and really cover everything. And then I'll go back another day and maybe I'll walk it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I'll come from the other side.
So how often are you doing that? I mean, like, I guess that depends on how big the deer is, right?
Yeah, basically, yes.
Yeah.
Basically, yes. It depends on how much I value that area, because it's a lot easier to get permission to go shed hunting than it is to go hunting.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saying, hey, you know, this is what I'm looking for, this is what I'm after, you know, you say, can I walk this property? You know, they might not let you hunt, but they might let you shed hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's important to you, and maybe a particular deer is that you're after, you can maybe, you know, maybe not get to hunt it, but you can work off of what you find by shed hunting it and walking that and making those waypoints, and then coming back to, you know, hunting season, you can make the most of it by figuring, well, maybe I was hunting over here on my side of the fence, but maybe I should hunt over here. And so there are infinite you know, aspects of this that you can really dive into as far as that goes on the on the side of things. But, you know, just – and the one thing I would preach more than anything is I know it's hard because everybody's time is limited, but it's the persistence of it. The more you're out there, the more you're in the woods, the more you're looking at leaves and sticks and hopefully antlers and ciphering that in your head and figuring out what you're looking for, you know, it will click. It will come to you. It's hard to stick with it. I mean, I get it. It's not for everybody, but once it comes to you, you know, it's like a game or a sport or any kind of, you know, whatever you want to play or do, you know, once it comes to you and you realize what you're looking for, it gets easier and easier with time. And so, if you really can stick with it, especially if you're in a high deer density area, you know, you really can have some success. And, you know, there's a deer, you know, for example, the deer I killed in 2017, I have one side to him the year before and his set from the year before that. And I think one more from the year before that. And so there's just, you know, there's nothing better than this, you know, somebody comes over, you tell them the story. Hey, I shot this deer. Here's his antlers from the year before.
Yeah,
here's
cool.
His antlers from the year before that, you know, and that's awesome. You know, building that history with that individual deer is really cool.
Yeah. So do you feel like you do better if you dedicate a whole day and spend, you know, daylight to dusk shed hunting that day? Or do you like to break it up and do like 3 or 4 hour stints because your eyes get tired?
Well, my schedule is different than everybody else's. I work for myself in that sense, so I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to spend entire days unless it's a Saturday, because if I'm not careful, I will get on a tear and go, and I'll walk and walk and walk and walk. So I have to think about it to myself. I have to limit myself and plan, okay, you're going to do this today. You got to get your work done. And then you're going to go maybe this afternoon if you're lucky.
Mm.
And so that is part of it. You know, a lot of people, like anything else, the time factor is their limiting deal. And the one thing I failed to mention that I think a lot of folks who talk about this subject would mention is when it comes to weather, those rainy and overcast days are by far my favorite. If I know it's going to be misting, rainy, cloudy, I will, this time of year, rearrange my schedule to work on the sunny days and be able to have off the nasty days.
Mm-hmm.
Because those antlers pop so well when the leaves are dark and those white antlers pop.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see, you know, you will be able to pick those things out so much better in that type of conditions that I would much rather go when it's like that if you have that ability. If you're just, you know, on the weekends and it's a, you know, sunny days can be very hard, especially when it's shadows and they're playing with your eyes and, you know, you've got sun and shadows and you're in the woods specifically. That's when it can be very hard. And so, you know, doing that, it's almost kind of like hunting. I'd rather go early in the morning when the sun's not at its, you know, 9 o'clock or higher. And I'd rather go in the evening when it starts to set and we get a little more shade and it's a little more consistent. You know, you can seem to do better there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you use binos a lot whenever you're scoping out sheds?
Yes, I would always, you know, I have my harness on me at all times, which I don't even hunt with binos a lot of the times unless I'm in open country.
Yeah.
But I always recommend, there's a lot of times I've walked up to a field and looked at it, you know, beans, you know, whatever, and see nothing. And then I pull those binos up, do a quick glass and look out there and be like, right, there's an antler. And I would not have seen it if I had not taken the time to walk to that edge and walk out in that field and just, you know, do a pan across the field from one side to the other. There's no telling how many antlers I've picked up that way by just having just even basic binoculars, nothing fancy, you know, just taking a look across the field. You'd be amazed at how many you'll find that way.
Yeah, cool. For sure. Where are you putting all these sheds? Like, how many do you have? What are you doing with them?
In the shed.
I don't, several hundred. I don't really know. You know, I've got tubs. Literally, I just buy those tubs from Walmart, those plastic tubs, and just throw them in it. Mm-hmm. If they're worthy enough, they might make it into the house, you know, on the counter, on top of the fridge, you know, here and there.
In the bed.
On the table. You know, occasionally that happens. My wife, gets a little upset. After a while, they have to go out to the shop, or, you know, which I do have a shelf, which I can send you a picture of. There's a shelf in my in our shop where all of both of our deer are, and it's dedicated solely to shed antlers, and it's just full from top to bottom from everything my dad has been able to find from the 1990s all the way through, you know, right now.
Wow. Yeah.
And I pretty much keep them organized by location or sentimental value. You know, there's some antlers that, you know, this deer I've got three sets off of, and, you know, those set those, that sets right here, those three sets are right here on the shelf, you know, or this deer. And that's what's so cool about it to me. I'll go over there in the summertime when it's 100 degrees out and there's nothing to do. You know, you pick one up and it's like, okay, this is this deer from this farm back in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look, you know, oh, this is the deer that I end up shooting, or this is the deer that we don't ever know what happened to. Yeah. Well, this was just a random one that I found one time.
You know, do you label them?
I struggle with it because I hate to put Sharpie or anything on them.
Me
I do
too,
have
man.
Some of those. I know. I do have some of those tags that I've used some. If they're big enough, you don't have to label them because you're never going to forget. Like,
yeah.
That's where I came from. You're not going to know that.
Yeah.
Some of those small, and I have 3, 4, and 5 tubs that I have no idea what I'm going to do with one day that I consider random. They're not memorable enough. They're maybe from a farm I walked that was for sale one time, and I picked it up and I threw it in a box. Or maybe it's got chew marks, or maybe it's bleached. And so I've got several tubs of those that I have no idea what will happen with one day. I assume my kids will probably sell them. But I, you know, they'll get, you know, $3 a pound. I don't know. Maybe that's high. I really don't know what the price is. I have no clue. But you know, that's – so I don't know. I can't let them go. I have so many people ask me, my dog loves to chew on those. Can you get me some of those? Maybe, probably not.
Yeah, this gal from my wife's work asked if we had any extra ones. Like, whoever had extra sheds, man?
No, there's no such thing.
What's the most sentimental shed you have?
It really leads me back to Arkansas. There was one antler in particular. I was young enough. My dad was driving the four-wheeler, and I was sitting in front of him. And we were driving down a trail on a farm we had leased. And I didn't see it. I should have seen it. And he got after me for not seeing it. But that was before I knew anything about anything. And there was an antler off of an 8-point that scored probably in the high, had been the 50s. And we still got it, obviously. But it was a mid-50s 8-point, if not bigger. We actually took it to Arkansas Big Buck Classic that year and had it scored. I don't remember. I think it was a 60s, 70-inch antler. And it was hanging in briars about 5 foot off the ground.
Whoa.
You know, eye level. And that deer, and it was just like we drove the four-wheeler up, and he slammed on the brakes and looked over, and it was just hanging there. In the branch, and I never saw it. He had pointed out to me, but that deer, that antler there is one of the biggest ones we have to date. And, it still sits right up there, right in the very front. As soon as you, you know, that's the, I don't remember, but I think the G3 on that thing is pushing 13 inches.
Golly.
But it is, that one's probably the most, that I can recall. That's just one of the ones that, which that year we only found one side to that deer. The year before, we have both sets, both sides, and we actually put those on a little year-old mount. They're hanging up in our shop right now. But that particular antler was the biggest one we'd ever had at that time. And, you know, that was an antler that I remember to the day finding. And that was the deer that just, when you were a kid, you always dreamed of. You know, that was the deer that I always thought about. Every time I'd go hunting down there, that's the deer I want to see. That's the deer. That's the deer. Now, and that was pre-trucking. You know, when we hunted that farm, it was between two.
Uh-oh. I bet his phone died. When we hunted that deer, it was you're there. Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we lost you for like 5 seconds. Start over at when we hunted that deer, it was between something.
2000 and 2004. So that was back when Dad was running deer cams on 35 millimeter.
Oh, wow.
That's back when that antler was found. So if you think about it, that deer's been dead. He actually got shot by a friend of ours after we moved away a couple years later. That deer had to have been 9 or 10 years old. It was something ridiculous. But, you know, that shed antler is still, to me, the one you immediately gravitate towards when you walk up to our, you know, little collection there.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I've got a nice 8-point or 4-point side I found in Kansas. It's kind of like that for me, but I think that my most sentimental shed is I found a Coos Whitetail shed in New Mexico on that Gila elk hunt, and that's it's like, I don't know, probably came off a 70-inch deer or less, you know, it's like a tiny buck, but just cool, you know, it's just not a very common thing, so that's going to be hard for me.
It's hard. I mean, and I'm sitting here as we're talking. I'm in my bedroom. I'm on my phone, obviously. I've got two sheds off of more or less 4 points, a year and a half old deer. One of them was, I remember vividly, the very first shed I ever found, tracking a doe that my dad had shot on our family farm in Arkansas with my grandpa. And it just chewed up. It's all to pieces. It's not worth anything. And then the other one that's laying here is no bigger, but my grandma found it, who's since passed.
Yeah.
And she found it on their farm in Arkansas, which is just up the road from the other one.
Yeah.
So there's a couple antlers here. And that's the thing. It's the stories. It's behind them. I mean, you get to build the history. They're all different. They're all so cool. Deer are fascinating in general. But there's so much that can help you on the hunting aspect of this side of things, from shed hunting in general. There's so much that can help you from hunting it. But it's also the memories that go with it, just like anything else, because you are physically taking something home that day that's important to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When legal, right? You ever been in a state when where legal. You can't pick up an antler?
I don't know if I can. That would not be a state that I should probably go to.
Yeah, I know, man. You got national parks. I don't think you're supposed to.
Yeah.
And I'm like, right. Man.
Luckily, I've not had to encounter that, but.
Yeah.
But that would be a struggle.
Do you still pack every single one of them out? Like, if you find a button, are you taking it with you?
Man, I am. It's hard. It's going to have to be pretty ugly for me to let it lay.
I left some land.
Nothing.
In New Mexico, but that was in a backcountry hunt. We left some good elk sheds behind, you know, and it's like, oh, I don't want to pack out a 8-pound.
I don't think I could have got them out. After getting out of there, I don't think I could have got them out.
Because I carried a mule deer and that whitetail. Yeah, I carried a mule deer too, you know. But, yeah, it's tough, man. That's a tough thing to do, for sure.
It would for sure be hard for me to leave one. And I've left a few in my day, but definitely not my first option.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. I hear you. Well, I'm not going to ask you where, but can you describe the area that's going to be your first go-to? You know, like, is it timber? Is it field edge? Where's your first go?
Well, this time of year is without a doubt field edge.
Yeah.
You walk those field edges. I picked up three so far this year, and they're all old. So nothing fresh yet, which it's only still early January. So I'm not trying to stress over it, but those field edges, you know, you can walk those easy. You would believe how many deer will, and I think it's something to do with bucks, how many deer will lose those antlers within 50 yards of a field edge. It's like they say staging. It's like there's something to do with that makes those bucks feel comfortable. If you'll not only walk the outside of a, you know, not only walk the inside edge of a field, but walk inside the woods, no more than 50 yards, how many antlers you'll find will be rather impressive to you. And I can't explain it, but if you'll walk 50 yards inside the woods next to a field, and I think a lot of it has to do with the forage, but that's a lot of times where you'll see honeysuckle or things like that, you know, a little diversity, or maybe there's some safety there that makes those bucks feel comfortable. But you wouldn't believe the amount of antlers you'll find, you know, 50 yards or less inside a field edge.
Yeah. How much, like, take a public land, for instance. Let's just use that as a scenario. How much does distance from parking or from the road matter to you when shed hunting? Are you spending much time near the roads, or are you, like, trying to burn back in there and get where people don't go often?
You know, I really don't find much difference. I found them as close as 30 yards from the road, you know, to as much as a mile deep. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you can listen to the beast approach and this, that, and the other. And I think there's some validity to it, depending on where you're at, as far as, you know, those deer that watch their entry and or watch your entry rather than theirs, mm-hmm. you know, that sit next to the parking lot versus deer that live a mile deep. And I really see no variation. It really seems to me an equal amount. And I will very often spend a lot of time putting cameras, I'll, you know, 50 yards from a road, easily accessible, easily checkable without bothering the deer.
Mm-hmm.
And if, and that might be, I might have 20 of those scattered, you know, public or private. And if there's a deer worth targeting or learning more about, well, maybe then I'll dive in more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to go, you know, a mile deep unnecessarily unless I have a reason. And so I'll find a lot of those, you know, I mean, I have literally, I found one time. It could not have been more than 6 foot off the pavement. I mean, it was literally in a ditch that the county mows because they're, you know, that's what the first green was that year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we had stopped to glass a field, and I was riding shotgun with my buddy. We stopped to glass a field, and I took my binoculars down and looked down and had to tell him to stop because there was an antler so close to his truck tire. I mean, I literally have a picture still on my camera, I know, of his truck and that antler right off the road. And so that first green can really mean something, especially to those bucks that are hanging on late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, man. Well, dude, I appreciate all this information, man. This is like, you know, I told KC before, I was like, man, I think this is going to be a different shed hunting podcast than what you normally hear guys do, you know. And so I appreciate you bringing that creative approach, man, and just that higher level thoughts, man. I can tell, like, I mean, I think anybody who follows you or knows you probably can tell that you put a lot of effort into this, a lot of effort into thinking about things, to understanding things, and to also being creative when it comes to all different aspects of hunting antlers or deer. And so, I appreciate that a lot about you, and I appreciate you being able to come on and spend some time with us and divulge some of that information to the listener base here. So with that, man, I'd like to give you a chance to talk about your real estate a little bit and plug that, man, for anybody who's interested, because I know you do a lot of that, and you'd be a pretty good guy to probably break down a piece of property and go, hey, this is the one you want if you're looking to buy one, right?
Yeah. Well, hopefully it was worthwhile. You know, I rambled. I mean, it's definitely something I enjoy and I love to do. You know, I'm a licensed real estate broker in both Tennessee and Kentucky. And on the western portions of both states is really kind of where I focus. Obviously, whitetails are my passion. You can, you know, find me pretty much on social media and all, you know, Reese Johnson 7, pretty much anywhere. You know, any way I can help, I'll be happy to help anybody out there that's listening, sheds or not. You know, that's just something that I definitely thoroughly enjoy. Appreciate you guys having me. Hopefully it was a little different and maybe somebody can take away something from it. If not, you know, feel free to send me a message and I'll hopefully clarify. But that's kind of where I'm at. And like I said, anyway whatsoever, Western Kentucky, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. And definitely it was, man, it was good stuff, man. And like I said, I appreciate the approach that you take to this whole thing, man. And we'll be in touch. I know off the air here, we'll be probably talking a lot about deer hunting. And in the future, hopefully we can share camp together.
Yeah, well, that would be fine with me. It's about time to start walking.
That's right, man. All right, well, have a good night, man.
All right, you too. Appreciate it.
Let me tell you something.
Tell me.
I try to clean my accent up just a little bit so people can understand me. And when I get somebody like Reese on, who also has a thick accent, I revert back real quick. Mm. So if you couldn't understand anything I said in that interview, I am sorry.
If you're north of Mason Dixon, this one might have been a tough one for you.
Or it could have been really funny, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
For sure.
Dude, Reese is pretty cool, man. Yeah. I have a feeling that one of these days we'll end up in the woods with that guy a little bit.
Yeah, I hope so. Because, yeah. I mean, I would like to chase some of the deer that he talks about chasing.
My goodness. If you don't follow Reese on Instagram, we'll put a link or put his Instagram handle down there below. I think it's Reese Johnson 7. I think you said it in the
thing. That's right, I think.
The dude posts like a big trail cam picture every day of a deer.
Yeah.
So pretty cool.
And, you know, I would love to have the problem of having to pass 155s. You know what I mean? So I think.
Or considering passing 180s.
<That's> you know? Yeah, for real. So this was a cool episode, man. I hope you guys gleaned some information from it and are able to take this going forward into the off season, into the summer scouting, and put yourself on big deer next year. With that said, make sure and go check out the YouTube, like we mentioned earlier. There's a lot of stuff coming out right now. I think we're even going to probably do a re-release and add some of the 2018 videos to our season playlist.
Ooh, there's some good stuff that happened in 2018.
Just because there's, you know, we're going to be pushing into 13,000 subs pretty quick here.
Yeah. And thanks, guys.
Yeah. And there are like 200 views on most of these videos. So I know you guys haven't seen them. You know what I mean? So, and there's a lot more than that listening to the podcast. So, you know, I know that you guys are going to, you know, haven't seen that stuff and would probably enjoy some of it. Essentially, it is the season before we created the idea. Back when it was the PLC.
That's right. If you missed the old PLC intro, just let us know. We might bring it back. Who knows?
Yeah. Just a little.
The good stuff.
That's right. Anyway, guys, we appreciate you listening. And remember, this is your element.
Living it.
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.